Welcome to another edition of Blue Cirrus Telehealth Radio. Tonight, I am excited to have a plethora of guests tonight. First, we're going to talk to the Community Health Center of Cape Cod and several of the clinicians that work in that organization. And then next, we'll be talking to folks from the California Telehealth Network, as well as the California Telehealth Resource Center, which are affiliated with the National Network of Community Health Organizations. The great process here with having all of these organizations together on our radio show today is that we get to see how these organizations work together and how they move telehealth forward and clinical care for their individual organization. So first, let's talk with a local organization that you in the Boston area will be able to recognize in their location. We'll be talking with the Community Health Organization of Cape Cod, Community Health Center of Cape Cod. Their focus is on providing the very best health care, as well as providing programs and education that help improve the overall health status of everyone living in the region. The CHC is a nonprofit organization that cares for patients regardless of their ability to pay or their insurance status. I am very excited to introduce several of our guests from the Community Health Center of Cape Cod. First, we have Arisha Self. She's the Chief Medical Officer at Cape Cod. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. We have Dr. Ryan Golden, who is the Program Manager for the Substance Use Disorder Clinic and is also a primary care physician. Welcome, Ryan.
Thank you, Michelle.
And finally, we have Alyssa Caggiano, who is a certified family nurse practitioner. And again, I'm happy to have you on the show as well, Alyssa. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Absolutely. This is our Thursday night show at WATD 95.9. And let's get into it. What's our first question here is going to be around, tell us a little bit about your organization, the community that you serve, and the work that you do and services that you provide. Dr. Seth, would you like to take that one?
Yes, thank you. Well, Community Health Center of Cape Cod, as you heard, we are a federally qualified health center. We are located at the upper Cape area, and we are a medical home. So meaning we are able to provide all services under one roof, such as primary care, optometry, addictions, dental services. So a truly medical home model where we are able to integrate all these services under one roof.
Really a great thing for all of the patients that you have there in the Cape Cod area. And because of the nature of that space where it is a vacation area, touristy area, you do have a diverse population. I'm sure that folks are coming in and out, not only those that live and work and educate themselves there in the Cape Cod area. And because of that diverse patient base, Dr. Golden, how does telehealth help bridge the gap in care and maybe even improve access to some of these patients that are potentially coming in and out of your area?
Yes. So with our patient population, you're correct. It is quite diverse. So 80% of our patients are at or below the 200% of the federal poverty line. We do have a number of patients who they spend their winters in warmer weather and they spend their summers on Cape Cod. So because of that, we have a few unique challenges. So we do have patients who are located in different parts of the country during different parts of the year. And we also have patients who have a number of social determinant of health barriers. So for our telehealth program, that allows us a few opportunities, a few advantages. So because we're able to have a visit with our patients who may, you know, not be able to make it to the office because they're out of state, or we have patients who have difficulty with transportation, or patients who aren't able to take the time off of work. So they're able to fit, you know, a health visit into their lunch break for even. A lot of patients, they have difficulties with childcare, and being able to find somebody to take care of your children while you take the time to come into an office for an appointment, you know, it isn't an option for a lot of our patients, unfortunately. So being able to reach out to these patients over telephone, video conference allows us the opportunity to connect with them, provide care, and meet our patients where they're at, rather than having them stop their life abruptly and come in to our health center for a visit.
Yeah, we've talked a lot on this show about the convenience of telehealth in the formats that you just described, where it's a, you know, a mom having to take a day off of work, or a dad having to take a day off of work, or whatever family member might need to be able to, you know, have to do that, and the disruption that that can cause. That's in the pediatric space, but that also includes your own individual work day and taking time off of your day. And it does certainly have a big effect on improving the access to care, particularly when your organization has, you know, such a mission as you do, which is to care for patients regardless of their ability to pay or their insurance status. One of the things that I know your organization is doing, Dr. Golden, is around the program is using a smart exam, the Bright MD program. I think it may have even been purchased recently by another company. But essentially, for our listeners, this is a type of questionnaire that someone can ask or answer, excuse me, then and allows the clinician then to see what the answers to those questions are and decide whether or not the patient needs to, you know, have a visit or not. How are you using this smart exam to help your organization with capacity in an ever shrinking workforce?
Absolutely. So the smart exam provides, you know, a great opportunity to provide triage for somebody's medical question without having to have a staff member, you know, directly address it one-to-one. So really it allows one staff member the ability to go through and respond to the smart exam questions. So basically when a patient, you know, has a medical question, they're able to log into the Bright MD application. They're able to type in their question. And if their question is something that requires, you know, an in-person evaluation, it will make those recommendations. If the problem is something that could potentially be quite serious or severe, you know, their patients are directed to seek emergency medical attention. But if it's a simple medical question, like let's say that you have a history of recurrent urinary tract infections and you seem to be having symptoms and this feels like a urinary tract infection, and normally to be able to, you know, address that, you would have to go to, you know, areas that really are, they don't make sense, you know, from a quality standpoint and an equity standpoint for somebody to go utilize ER resources to deal with, you know, a problem that be quickly addressed an outpatient setting. And then also it saves a person from having to travel to go to a walk-in clinic to be evaluated. And all of that headache, you know, is alleviated by, you know, typing your symptoms, a history is taken, and that is referred to one of our on-call providers to review. And if it's, you know, a simple problem that can be addressed with, you know, a medication, that can be sent to the patient's pharmacy. Any follow-up can be arranged from that point as well. So really it saves an individual from having to actually come into the clinic, be seen and walk in, or even worse, in an emergency room setting that isn't really appropriate for, you know, most minor problems. So it allows more streamlined triage and allows, you know, one on-call provider to cover, you know, what would normally take maybe several on-call providers if somebody is managing a walk-in clinic.
Yeah, really good point. Definitely allows you to extend your clinicians, right? This is the whole point of the triage process. In your application of that, do you require that the patients have already seen a clinician in your organization? Or is this something that anyone could look at your website and potentially do an exam?
So I believe Dr. Seth would like to comment on this.
Go right ahead, Dr. Seth. Yeah.
Thank you. So currently we are in the pilot phase. And so we are only offering BrightMD to our CHC patients.
Expand that or currently keeping it with your existing patient base?
You're right. So currently in the pilot phase, so keeping it within the existing patient base, but hopefully, I guess we are, it's very exciting right now to see the response from patients and providers. We've received great feedback. And also from the providers, their cycle time goes down to just 5 minutes per case versus when a patient is actually coming in, where it can take hours or several minutes to solve that case.
Yeah, really good examples that you used too, Dr. Golden, around, you know, if it's a UTI, you probably have had a UTI before, or you may be someone that has chronic UTIs. It's very inconvenient to have to go to an appointment to do a test when you're like, I know what this is. I just really need this prescription. Or if your kid always has an ear infection, you know, this is the kind of thing that makes it very easy to streamline the process within the clinician. How have you found that or any of your telehealth programs have improved the quality of care that you are providing? And that question is for you, Dr. Golden.
Yes, so I actually see quite a bit of benefit from my patients. So I am also the program manager for the Substance Use Disorder Clinic. So my patients often have a lot of barriers to healthcare, whether it's instability of transportation, housing, work. So my patients, to be able to connect with them remotely over their phone, rather than having them, you know, have to jump through hoops to come in for an appointment, it really lowers the barrier to care and really lowers the barrier to be able to get people medications that they need for their chronic medical conditions. It really lowers the barrier to address issues that might be neglected if a person, you know, is unable to come in to their clinic for health care. So it really allows us to meet our patients where they're at. I could have an appointment with one of my patients while they're sitting in their living room comfortably, especially if they're going through, you know, life stressors or dealing with mental health concerns. Really leaving your home and coming into a doctor's office can be really unrealistic for some patients. So this allows us to break down those barriers and to reach through into a person's home or, you know, wherever they may be to deliver healthcare.
Absolutely. And Alyssa, tell us a little bit about how you're working with the community to help improve healthcare digital literacy, because one of the challenges we've talked about on this show is that, and it happens in the industry, is that now that we're relying on more innovative tools to conduct a telehealth visit or any kind of clinical visit, that we may end up inadvertently creating a digital divide where we have some patients that have access to smartphones or have access to the data to be able to do this, or maybe they don't even know how to use it in that way. They maybe aren't as adept in the digital tools overall. So how are you working in the community to improve those overall digital literacy and educating the public on ways to access care?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've started doing remote patient monitoring for different chronic diseases, which is so awesome because historically a concern for clinicians for using telehealth was we wouldn't have vital signs at the visit. But so we've come to learn that home blood pressures have repeatedly demonstrated greater accuracy and prognostic value than in-clinic readings, especially when we know the actual blood pressure cuff is accurate and the technique the patient uses is correct. So what we've started doing here is having one of our nurses go to the patient's house and deliver a blood pressure cuff that we have validated. We know that it works correctly and they're taught how to use it. And those readings go directly to us. We get alarmed if they're too high or too low, or for the most part, we just get a log for a week. And it's amazing because when I'd have a patient, have them come back in a month, their blood pressure maybe still not be well controlled, or they're not tolerating their medication well, then they have to come back another month. Now that's three visits. And usually we kind of lose that patient to follow up because that's a lot of time off of work and those other barriers that Ryan had talked about. So this is just so nice. We can virtually talk about it over the phone. We have the actual data in front of us. And we've started doing this now with diabetes for glucose and excited to see what else we can do with it.
Yeah, remote patient monitoring is such a great tool to be able to do exactly what you described, right? So this is for our listeners, if you haven't seen a remote patient monitoring tool. This is a toolkit potentially that might have a scale, might have a blood pressure, or might have a pulse oximeter, which you put on your finger to see how your oxygen levels are. And you're right. A lot of times it's just the administration or giving someone a blood pressure cuff, and then they're able to do that in their own home. I know I have said on this show before that I'm sure that I have white coat syndrome. And so my doctors have told me it doesn't happen as often as people think, but the blood pressure, you know, cuff at home allows you to be able to get that data. And you're right, 3 months could be, or more, as you said, to lose that patient. Sounds like you're doing a lot of on the ground help in your community to help them understand how these pieces of technology are working and how those pieces of technology can help them to improve their chronic conditions in particular. What have you found, Alyssa, from your patient base in terms of their response to that? What have you had in terms of feedback from patients on that program and any others?
I've found that they've gotten much more empowered by their care when they're actually, you know, taking these readings. They're seeing them go down over time. I get much more, you know, my chart messages being like, so my blood pressure is still this. Do you think we should add something? And I've never gotten those messages before. So they just seem to be more engaged, which is awesome. And, you know, it's exciting for me too. So,
yeah. And that I'm sure ultimately helps improve their overall quality of care. Like you said, if you're asking and you're seeing it, then you want to know, what can I do to improve it? I read an article recently that said 40% of patients that were certified in particular study had some kind of a wearable device. Well, we know from wearable devices, it's typically those people that may not need them. But once you put this type of remote monitoring tool in their home, that's exactly the same response. I mean, how many people are looking at whether or not they can close those circles on their, you know, Apple Watch, because they want to make sure that they're doing what they need to do for their health. So that's the same type of thing with a remote patient monitoring program. That's great. Great work there, Alyssa. Thank you so much. And Dr. Seth, can you tell us a little bit about how the community of Cape Cod can even get involved and what's next for the community health centers of Cape Cod?
Yeah, well, we have a very exciting time coming up for us. You know, we are partnering with the YMCA and we are building another medical home under the same roof of YMCA. So we are going to the community, we are taking access to the community, and that is really very exciting. You know, it helps us remove barriers to care. It helps us address healthcare disparities and really make healthcare less stressful. And, you know, like Ryan mentioned earlier, that coming to the doctor is or making time for that appointment can be just a life stressful event for a lot of patients. And so we want to meet patients where they are. And so we are going to the community, partnering with the Y. Other exciting things, you know, we want to continue working on our expansion of BrightMD and remote patient monitoring program. And, you know, what makes us really different is our team is constantly thinking about innovation and thinking ahead, thinking out of the box on improving access for our community.
That's great. I think not only are you improving the care and the quality of life and healthcare of the patients that you have there in Cape Cod, but you're also doing it in a beautiful location, which there can't be anything better than that. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today. It's been a pleasure. I'd love to hear more about your program and about how you work together with other health systems across the organization, across the country. I'm sure that as your patients leave and go to other areas of the country, you know, you have some organizational referrals and things like that. I'd love to hear what's happening next as you go to your next phases with BrightMD. And actually, before I wrap it up, I should ask that. Tell me, what's the one cool thing? What's the next thing that you're going to be doing at CHC Cape Cod? Is that going to be you, Dr. Golden, or Dr. Seth?
Well, I'll take that, and then I'll let Ryan also add in onto that. So what's next for us is, again, you know, we are continuing to work towards innovation and improving quality of our patients. And access is our big task here. So we want to make sure we create access, whether it's through telemedicine or through in-person care, and you know, any touch point with the patient. We want to make sure whether you're coming in through the pharmacy door or coming for an eye exam, we want to catch you for and see, are you due for a blood sugar test? Let's get that done in this visit. So just improving overall care at every touch point for the patient. I think we just want to continue working on that.
Absolutely. I think that's great. Thank you so much. Again, appreciate you being on the show tonight. This is WATD 95.9. We are the smartest show on radio. And welcome back to Blue Cirrus Telehealth Radio. What a great interview we had with Dr. Golden, Dr. Seth, and also Alyssa Caggiano, the nurse practitioner from the CHC of Cape Cod. If you do want to know any more about CHC of Cape Cod, please reach out to them at their website at chcofcapecod.org. So that's chcofcapecod.org. They'd love to hear from you, and you can learn more about their telehealth program and the fantastic work that they're doing in that area. Next, we have our next guest, which I'm excited to talk with. They have a coordination with the CHC of Cape Cod, so we'll learn about that and also about the programs that they're assisting with and helping folks across the country as well as in the state of California and Massachusetts, and how they're advancing telehealth. But it's Jennifer Stahl, the Executive Vice President of External Affairs. She's also the president of the California Telehealth Network, which is a partner of the California Telehealth Resource Center within the overall umbrella of the National Network of Community Health Organizations. And that is a big mouthful, but these are multi-organizations that are working together in order to advance healthcare and healthcare technologies. Jennifer, it's very nice to have you on the show tonight. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Michelle.
Absolutely. As we heard, the folks at CHC are doing a great job there and helping advance healthcare. But tell us a little bit about what you do and your role in your organization and how that dovetails into the work that they're doing in Cape Cod.
Sure. Yes, OCHIN is a national not-for-profit research and innovation center, and we are in search for solutions for on expertise, clinical insights, and really providing advanced technology support to drive health equity. Our focus is on underserved communities, both rural and urban, and we support healthcare providers, rural hospitals, schools, state agencies, to help them use technology to increase access to medical care and behavioral health services, including telehealth. My role is to lead our advocacy and development teams as Executive Vice President of External Affairs. And I also wear another hat, which is the president of the California Telehealth Network. The California Telehealth Network's mission is to make sure everyone has access to high quality, affordable broadband, and particularly medical grade broadband in rural communities, as well as making sure we're expanding access to knowledge and solutions around telehealth and virtual care. We have been operating the telehealth network and the Telehealth Resource Center since 2017. And it's that knowledge we actually scale not only from California, but all across the country, including in Massachusetts, where we have about 13 to 14 unique organizations that we serve in the state, mostly federally qualified health centers, but also work with other organized health systems to help really close health equity gaps. And CHC Cape Cod is one of our members. We support them with technology solutions and learning solutions to help improve health equity and close health equity gaps through digital solutions.
Absolutely. And I think that when you think about the work that you're doing and how that is supporting the healthcare organizations that you do help, you mentioned this idea of health equity and improving health equity. Tell our audience what health equity really means.
Yeah. So for OCHIN, health equity really means that everyone has the access to high quality healthcare, regardless of their income, their zip code, et cetera. And it's really addressing the distribution of healthcare, making sure that care can be delivered and you have access to high quality care regardless. And it's our mission to make sure that we are addressing health disparities and closing health equity gaps. We do it through a lens of technology and knowledge solutions. And really it's around data, is understanding and empowering organizations to have access to high quality data systems and support regardless of your size, your capacity, and your resources, to be able to have that information, to be able to empower your community to drive health and well-being locally as much as possible. So that's just a little bit about what we do.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about on this show, and actually our October show was around this idea of improving broadband access across all organizations, but in particular, the rural space, where the cost of accessing broadband space, getting broadband to that last mile or even the last 5 miles, is so costly that the companies don't necessarily want to do that. And a great place for an organization like the California Telehealth Network and the TRC to step in and help. This is exactly the way governments should work. So now we know health equity really allows for the patients to be able to reach what they need to in terms of healthcare, and there's not a disparity there, assuming that we do have the connectivity that we need. Tell us the value of telehealth in advancing that health equity, and particularly in the medically underserved areas that you mentioned.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a great question, and broadband access is actually a key question, and we've put out the resources that we need. Hopefully it gets to that last mile, and I know states are working really hard with their federal partners to make sure that happens. But telehealth, and I'll also interchange the words virtual care, yep, is an incredible modality in which to reach communities in ways we haven't been able to reach before. And, the pandemic flipped the switch on the opportunities to really think about it differently, because for the first time, we allowed payment for this modality of care. It was always, oh, we can't do it. We can't transform. We can't do it. Well, we were forced to have to do something differently. I'm very proud of the work Ochin has done. And in the first week of the pandemic, we had 22,000 providers up and on telehealth platforms across the country. So they didn't skip a beat. Our members didn't skip a beat during the pandemic. But we've been learning through telehealth over the last 3 years. What we've learned is that it actually is able to create a redistribution of healthcare services. So if you have specialty care in Massachusetts and those providers are in the Metro Boston area, how do you get them out into, Western Mass? How do you close that gap? And should we be doing that above state lines, particularly around the fact that we have such a finite number of providers, and particularly in the specialty care space, and even in subspecialty care, how do we really expand that opportunity to be able to bring more care to more communities? And what we saw through our data, actually, during the pandemic, is that it actually patients that have key social drivers of health, such as I can't get to a doctor because I don't have transportation, I physically can't get there, or I am experiencing houselessness and I can't get there, or I don't have documentation, I'm scared, right? I don't want to go to the provider. These are folks that are actually using telehealth at higher levels. And so we're actually opening access to not only specialty care I talked about earlier, but also in primary care, so that we're keeping people healthier. And access to care, doesn't matter how we drive it in modality, is really, really the fundamental piece. How do we get access to care? And then the final thing I will share is that this is a real great opportunity to also close the health equity gap around languages. you know, a virtual care, what we saw is virtual care actually provides, we can actually bring in on-demand translators so we can write through a Zoom chat. We can actually have different languages brought in to be able to provide more culturally competent care. And just being able to think differently also around the desperate need we have around behavioral health. Behavioral health and addressing substance use, but particularly behavioral health, we will never have enough behavioral health providers to what we have as a need in a community. So if we can drive that, and also behavioral health care, many people just prefer using a virtual visit or even just audio only telehealth and behavioral health. And it's really creating access where we've had desperate shortages before. So the opportunity is great. Absolutely. One thing I would share, Michelle, about, you know, we have challenges, though. We have to be able to measure quality, too. So payment, being able to have permanent payments so providers can lean into the space and continue to diversify their practice between in-person and virtual. We have to have sustainable payment structures. And many states have adopted permanent payment and within Medicaid and in the commercial insurance, but we still have some ways to go in Medicare. And I'm happy to talk about that in a little later.
Work with Jennifer Stahl from the Organization for Community Health Organizations, the National Network for Community Health Organizations, and the Executive Vice President of the California Telehealth Network as well, and the President of California Telehealth Network as well. One thing you mentioned before we went to break, Jennifer, was around the advancement of patient care and the challenges that you had, or the successes, I should say, during COVID, that you were able to expand access to care and behavioral health. I wanted to touch a little bit more on the behavioral health side, because what we have seen in our, and I'm curious to know if you've seen it as well, is not only the telehealth programs, the virtual care programs, not necessarily redefining care or redesigning care through innovation. And so that's kind of our next step, is we really need to redesign this care, particularly when it comes to behavioral health. It's not only have we seen that patients have preferred it, but in addition, in working with some of the public health organizations, we've seen that patients have actually benefited. Their outcomes are better, their compliance with medication adherence, as well as in one case that I can speak about, there was a video visit where a behavioral health provider was on the phone and domestic violence was occurring, and they were able to actually assist the patient on the other side. Not necessarily that you may not have incurred that, but they were not only able to assess the patient or assist the patient, but also the person who was actually perpetrating the domestic violence. They were then able to get them into treatment as well. So not only when they may never have seen them because of the circumstances of being in a behavioral health visit. I know that's down to the clinician level here, Jennifer, and I apologize for that. But have you seen that type of thoughts around redesigning care and the patient's feedback around and the outcomes that you've received in doing this virtual care?
Yeah, it's a lot of questions, and I can in one, Michelle. So I'll try to break it apart.
Try to tackle them.
So the first thing I would share is, you know, when you have a virtual visit and you're doing it in a way where you're having a video visit, you are inviting your provider into your space in a secure way. And, they have an opportunity to look at just outside of how you present in an office, right? So, you know, we all present in a particular way, but in a virtual space, being able to see, you know, some of the social complexities maybe your patients experience that would be potentially not reported per se for many reasons, allows insight for a provider to be able to better support a comprehensive package. So I will say that. And then the next thing I would say is one of the big areas of advocacy for OCHIN, in which I lead, as well as the with the CTN hat on, is around thinking about how do we drive more sustainability in our payment structures that are for those that are serving the most vulnerable communities across the country and patients across the country. The way we fund our healthcare system now creates the structure of feast and famine, feast and famine. I have resources, I don't have resources. And right now is a great case in point where the spending packages in Congress are being held up, and it is creating concern about potentially the reauthorization for community health center funding, which I hope we are able to overcome before the November 17th deadline. You know, we have to find more fixed and sustainable funding structures. Virtual care creates an opportunity to also take a lot of the acuity out of the system and also think about redesign of how we are delivering healthcare and to patients, and how does it fit in the higher level of care in your payment structures. So if you can take some of the lower acuity out and patients have access to virtual care through an appointment with a primary care provider they have a relationship with, it frees that provider up to also make sure their inpatient appointments are for the highest acuity things, or for things that need hands-on. You need a vaccine, you need to have other services where you need to actually be seen, physically seen by a provider. But there's a lot of things that virtual care can do. There's also things that it can't do, right? I mean, if you need to see an orthopedic surgeon to get a surgery, you can't do it virtually, right? So, but being able to think and redesign how our delivery system is structured and how it's paid for, having virtual care be one of the key foundations in this area, so that we are actually using a continuum of care and we're thinking thoughtfully around how we pay for that, can really redesign and redistribute healthcare dollars, but also that the capacity that we have in the system, because we have a tsunami of seniors that are going to need more care. We don't have enough providers. We also have a plethora of providers that are going to come out of the system and retire over the next 10 to 15 years. We have a crisis of numbers of providers. So if we can redistribute some of that across the country in a more equitable way, but also make sure that, you know, the in-person visits are for in-person visits and virtual visits are for virtual visits, and we learn, it'd be a shame not to continue to really lean into that space.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot on this show about the workforce challenges and the provider shortages. Absolutely a big challenge coming, and we need to utilize all of our clinicians at the top of their licenses as much as we possibly can to try to alleviate that. We did hear from CHC Cape Cod about how they're utilizing their smart exam to triage, and that's helping them to meet some of the ever-shrinking workforce challenges that they're even experiencing out there on the Cape. So this whole idea of workforce challenges is everywhere across the country, and certainly think that virtual care can help bridge that gap. So what are some of the policy priorities for OCHIN in the virtual care space when you look at your 2024 advocacy space?
Oh, I love this question. So 2024, as I mentioned, is so there's both a federal lens and then a state lens, but I'll start with what is on the docket for the federal side. You know, 2024, what had happened during the pandemic is lots of these telehealth flexibilities were opened up to be able to really to explore and use telehealth to be able to fill the gaps that existed because we closed our doors. A lot of those policies remain, and a lot of them have been, the extensions were kicked the can down to the end of 2024. So federally, Congress needs to take up a package around telehealth to make sure, as it relates to Medicare, which tends to transit down into the states, Medicare payment policies, as well as authorization policies around what telehealth can and can't do around Medicare. They extended it to at the end of last year for 2 years, and those authorizations end. And so it is expected that Congress will pick up a large package around telehealth. We're hoping that they make many of the what they opened up during the pandemic, many of the policies permanent, and we are advocating to ensure that that happens. The other thing we are advocating strongly for is this idea of thinking differently around access to specialty care. Again, we have specialists that are located in urban areas. How do we bridge that gap into the rural areas? And how do we ensure that there's an equitable access? So regardless of your ability to pay, you have access to specialty care. And I can tell you in the OCHA network, you can wait up to 180 days to see a neurologist because we serve the underserved. That is not acceptable. And so being able to close those gaps, if you're in crisis, you shouldn't wait 90 days to see a psychiatrist. And that's what we're seeing. That's what the data is showing us. So we have to think differently. And so we're going to be advocating to push this conversation around access to specialty care while there's a telehealth bill moving forward. There are also lots of bills being introduced right now about different things around telehealth. We expect them to be in a larger package that gets aggregated in Congress around telehealth. So it is expected to have a large package moving through in 2024. What I'm hearing right now is the Senate might pick it up in as early as April. The House is probably going to debate it sometime toward the end of the year. So that's what we're hearing. States continue to look at telehealth in terms of where they are around their Medicaid reimbursement, around the commercial space, because the sustainability of telehealth is depending on whether we can pay for it, right? If you're not being able to be paid as a provider, as a modality of care, you will choose other, you're just going to naturally choose other ways to see patients. As we're moving into what are called value-based pay models, as I talked about before, more sustainable structures, telehealth will be really, really key to make sure that it is included as part of the total package of services that are able to be delivered as we're moving into new payment models. So the state conversation is really around value-based pay and different payment models that Medicaid is going to continue to drive, and making sure telehealth is included in those structures as a permanent payment piece. Many states have already taken it up and have passed it and made telehealth permanent. So in California, Medi-Cal has permanent payment policies, but every state is different. And, you know, we have a federated model here across the country. So we have to go state by state. So.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We do have a federated model, which sometimes is a challenge in lots of different ways. One of the things that you mentioned around value-based payment, my only concern around payment being based in a value-based system, and this is my own opinion here, is that unfortunately a lot of organizations are still in a fee-for-service world, and we need to cycle them to a value-based program, but they're not there yet. So I'm hopeful that many of these states will not only consider how they're going to compensate within a value-based program to incentivize the use of telehealth and value and virtual care solutions, because they're proven to reduce cost, but also consider some of the fee for service so we don't lose the momentum. Because you're absolutely right, without payment, then we'll see clinicians making different choices. And I think that there will be some kind of a package next year, and I don't want to see our momentum lost. Certainly, I know you don't either.
No, Michelle, we couldn't agree more. And, you know, it was a big part of the conversation in the state of Oregon as they were advancing permanent telehealth policies. And actually, their legislation has nods to moving into more sustainable payment structures and how telehealth can fit into that space. Just know, because I was intimately involved in that legislation. But yes, I mean, being able to have the modality in which to deliver, and then how does it fit in the totality of the payment structure is really key. Instead of I'm billing, right? Moving into new models that look at team-based care and where does this modality fit in the team-based structure?
And maybe we need And right. And maybe we need to think about behavioral health a little bit differently than the rest, because it's such a usage for virtual care there. I think we could talk a whole nother show on that, and we'd be in furious agreement here, Jennifer, for sure. But tell us a little bit about what the connection is between virtual care and telehealth access and behavioral health.
Yeah, we clearly saw during the pandemic that behavioral health needs exploded. And again, we do not have enough providers to meet all of our needs. That utilization via virtual care was a modality to really help bridge that gap. And we continue to see today. And so during the pandemic, the OCHIN encounters, the patient visits based on virtual care and behavioral health, the vast majority were in a virtual delivery structure, those behavioral health encounters. And patient satisfaction was through the roof. And compliance rates were really great. No-show rates declined. All of these things are positive. And what we're seeing is that's actually that momentum of virtual behavioral health visits is actually being maintained. And so in the OCHIN network, we're seeing about 2 out of the 10 visits are virtual still today, but yep, the vast majority of behavioral health continues to be in a virtual space, just because it's both a win for the provider and a win for the patient. We hope that continues. And just given the capacity shortage, I can't emphasize enough. We talked about workforce, but we just don't have enough providers to meet the requirements. So the more that we can do virtual, the better, in our perspective.
Absolutely. I think the numbers are, as you said, the numbers just aren't there. You just can't create enough behavioral health providers, whether those are LCSWs up to psychiatrists. But in addition, the pressures in this workforce, in the way that we're seeing businesses and other for-profit entities, perfectly reasonable, they're in a business, but they're siphoning off some of those providers that would ordinarily potentially be working in an FQHC or in a community health center at the community level. But a clinician can't turn down the fact that they could work virtually, or that, you know, the salary is at a different level, that they just can't pass that up. But I think virtual care, as you said, will allow for that win-win. It's a win for the provider to be able to provide that care and have the flexibility of a schedule and that sort of thing without having to be in the office every minute, obviously with ensuring patient privacy and all of the things that we're all used to in the healthcare environment that is happening on a regular basis. So it's a very important, I think, virtual care. You know, it's already exploded in the behavioral health space, but we'll see it even continue into 2024 and in legislation. So we talked to CHC Cape Cod. We heard about their program, how they're utilizing virtual care and telehealth tools to be able to expand access and improve equity of care and their outcomes. How does OCHIN and the California Telehealth Resource Center and the California Telehealth Network, how do you all work together and how are you supporting the CHC of Cape Cod?
Yeah, So OCHIN is the parent organization of the California Telehealth Network, and the California Telehealth Resource Center is a HRSA-funded grant and which is operated under the California Telehealth Network. So simply put, the services and the support that we provide, the CHC of Cape Cod, they're an incredible member and partner. We provide all of their health information technology needs on the back end. So everything from the hosted EHR services to telehealth equipment, and in some cases, members also provide broadband subsidies. We do not do that for CHC of Cape Cod, but we do it in many, many other cases. And we also help them with all the ongoing supports. So we We help them with workflow engineering. We help them with staff augmentation if they need it. We do also billing and coding to help support it. Because what we've discovered is, you know, our members, again, these are providers that are focused on the most medically and socially complex folks in their community. They have higher needs and their reimbursements are the least a lot of times, or they're seeing patients without the ability to pay. Mm-hmm. That is their mission. And so we do everything we possibly can as a C3 to be able to support their mission as a C3. And so, you know, each health center that we support, and we have over 250 organizations that we support across the country that are unique tax ID'd organizations, they all have different needs, and we do our best to meet where they are, to support them where they are, and to do a knowledge transfer as much as we can. So they know how to use the EHR in their best capacity, that they're using telehealth in their best capacity, and they're sharing among the other members of the OCHIN what we call collaborative. So our governance is made up of our members, and they are sharing learnings across the platform. That's the knowledge piece. We do not want to be institutional knowledge holders. We want to be able to share that knowledge. And it's been a challenge with the workforce turnover over the last years because, you know, people are not staying, they're moving on. And so we continue to train and retrain and retrain. Because we need to make sure we're creating career ladders for health center workers so they stay in their communities to serve their communities. So that's we do lots of different things for lots of different folks. But it's all about making sure that they're empowered to really support their community the best they can.
And I think this is a perfect example of a great usage of virtual services. Years gone by, we would not have considered taking California resources and experience and knowledge and transporting it without that person having one person potentially relocating to the state of Massachusetts, for example, or the state of South Carolina, where I'm based. And now we're not worrying about where those individuals are located. We're worried more about what's the knowledge that they can impart to our organization and how can we help them regardless of where they are. And so congratulations to you and your organization for doing that work and helping all of the CHCs that you're assisting across the country. So I'd like to ask the one last question. What's the next big thing? What's the cool thing that we need to know, Jennifer?
The next big thing. So we talked about behavioral health a little bit. How do we innovate to be able to improve pediatric and adolescent behavioral health is one of the areas that we've been really focused on. We have a really cool partnership with the state of Ohio right now in building out and expanding access to telehealth within the school districts, particularly for behavioral health. So helping them build their roadmaps so that they can implement behavioral health services in really underserved areas like Appalachia that have not only, they had a triple pandemic because they've been suffering from the opioid epidemic. They have a behavioral health crisis. And of course, we just wrapped up COVID, right? So that's a really cool project. And I know a lot of other states are going to look at what Ohio's doing around building capacity at the school level for through telehealth for behavioral health for their kiddos, and also making sure that everyone has an equal opportunity for their best life. So that's really cool. And then we'll keep chipping away at Congress to move that telehealth bill, because we really do need Medicare. And then once we get policies on Medicare, then we can really lean in on the quality piece, which is, I think, Michelle, something that you talked about with having quality measures around what is a high quality encounter in a virtual space? What does that look like? So that's the next kind of frontier for us too.
Absolutely. That's great. Those are very cool and cool new things. Our guest tonight has been Jennifer Stahl, the Executive Vice President of External Affairs for OCHIN and the President of the California Telehealth Network. We love to share information about healthcare and virtual care and telehealth here on this show every month as well. And we appreciate you coming on the show tonight. Thank you so much for being here, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me, Michelle.
Absolutely. If you want to learn more about OCHEN, the California Telehealth Resource Center, or the Community Health Center of Cape Cod, go to their websites at chcofcapecod.org. That's for the Community Health Center of Cape Cod, or OCHIN.org, which is OCHIN.org. In addition, you could also go to caltelehealth.org for the California Telehealth Network. So caltelehealth.org, all one word. Jennifer Stahl, we've had a great show with you tonight, as well as the Community Health Centers of Cape Cod. We appreciate your time. Always want to share with our listeners helpful information about healthcare and telehealth. Appreciate it. Let's have another conversation on OCHIN and the California Telehealth Network. Have a great rest of your week. This is Blue Sierra's Telehealth Radio right here on WATD 95.9. We are the smartest show on radio.